This is Robert Bartolacci, Chief Digital Curator of the Mindshare Learning Report, Canada's Learning and Technology Magazine. Our December Mindshare Report is focused on schools of the future. I'm fortunate to have joined me for Mindshare Learning Moment, Ralph Bemurgi, an award-winning journalist and broadcaster whose work spans three decades. Recently, Ralph has transitioned into new careers as Senior Advisor to the Green Party of Canada, Director of Communications for the Honorable Glenn Murray, in both the Ministry of Research and Innovation and Training, Colleges and Universities at Queen's Park. Currently, Ralph is the Executive Advisor in the Office of the President at Sheridan College. And coincidentally, we recently discovered we both share a good mutual friend who resides in Arizona, who we hope will invite us down sometime soon. Thank you for joining me today, Ralph.
My pleasure. Well, good to see you.
Likewise. Congratulations on a wonderful career you've had in broadcasting. And so you decided to move on to bigger and better things, working for a college and inspiring future leaders. How did that happen?
Well, you know, I've never really had a strategy, so that helps, right? I don't say, oh, boy, I really got to do this. And, you know, if I don't, I won't be happy. I think I sort of got to a point with broadcasting where I just thought, you know, I've done this for a long time. I've had a great time. I've had lots of shows in radio and television and current affairs and variety. I had a lot of fun. But I got to a point where I didn't feel like I was learning as much as I wanted to anymore. And my curiosity, I guess my journalistic curiosity, journalists are generalists, right? They want to know about a lot of different things. And we have to be very quick studies because every day you're talking to somebody else who's devoted their life to something. But for me, I just thought, well, I want to make a difference. I want to work in the public sphere. So I kept on that way. I moved into working at Queen's Park because I wanted to experience the retail side of politics. I didn't want to run, but I wanted to make sure that I knew what it was really about. And it was a real eye-opener to be on the other side of that and see it from that retail side, that part that is about, if you're not elected, you can't do any of this stuff.
Right.
And Glenn, who was a good friend of mine, and said, I think they're about to make me a cabinet minister. If they do, would you come and work with me? And I said, sure. So we had a great time at research and innovation, and I learned a ton about that sector, and then at training colleges and universities. And while I was there, I bumped into a guy I used to go to school with at Ryerson for journalism, who ended up being the president of Sheridan College, Dr. Jeff Sabutsky. And he asked me if I'd come and work here.
Very cool.
With him. And so for 4 years now, I've been working in this sphere, and I've moved from advisor to director of strategic initiatives and partnerships. So I get to talk to a lot of different people about how we can all work together, and I love it. It's a great job.
It's fantastic, and it's refreshing for me. I've done many, many interviews over the 8 years that we've been publishing to have someone from industry like yourself with a really unique experience to come into education, understanding the shifting paradigm and the emerging needs for students. And congratulations on the success at Sheridan, establishing itself nationally and globally for some of its programs.
Yeah, it's great. The animation, we're one of the best in the world at producing the students we do who go on to win Academy Awards in animation. But there's also interactive design, which has become one of our degree programs, and that whole world is opening up. We also have an advanced manufacturing section up in Davis, which is in Brampton. There's 10,000 students in Brampton. It's our biggest campus of all. We have about 20,000 students at Sheridan in total, right?
Right.
So there, they're doing mind-breaking stuff with robotics or 3D printing, with laser cutting. It's just unbelievable. And it really is the sort of renaissance of manufacturing. And the lovely thing about being here is we're doing all these things that have hard skills within them, but we're marrying them with soft skills. We have a creative campus initiative that's serious. We're committed to it. We've trained over 100 of our staff in creative problem-solving methodologies that we share with Buffalo State University. And we are really intent on making sure that, as somebody said to me recently, the hard skill gets you the job, the soft skill gets you the promotion. And for us, that's really what we got to be able to bring to these students.
How do you stay at the forefront of innovation?
I think you have to decide that it's not just a word, right? Every pamphlet has innovative new ideas, an innovative company. Innovation requires some disruption. It's the kind of thing where you have to be able to decide where are the parts of what you do as an institution where you can have more risk, do more interesting things, and through the leadership that's provided by the executive group, encourage people to go ahead and do it. Because the problem with a lot of innovation is the leadership doesn't actually back it up. They just go, yeah, that would be great. Innovation, that would be great. And by the way, core business is what we do here. Absolutely. So trying to find a way to get core company and new company ideas to live in the same place is where you go. So when we come to our scholarship of teaching and learning, we have to start using hybrids and flipped classrooms and different methodologies and curation of digital libraries, and all these different things have to start coming into play so the student gets the maximum experience.
That's fantastic. And so my next question was going to be, how do you meet the emerging needs of students with respect to flexible learning spaces, online learning, and blended learning?
Well, we have a brilliant librarian, chief librarian, and she has put together a truly 21st century ability for a student to access what they need and to curate, to really bring together the different materials that a person might want to use in a course, so that a faculty member could say, you know, I need a chapter from this book, a chapter from that book. I need these. I need this TED talk. I need this conferencing piece, and I need a little Skype time with my students, so we can discuss issues. On instead of me sitting in an office doing it, I could just Skype it, and they can be wherever they want to be on their phone, and talk to me about the issues in class, and it works better. So. Really, it's a question of who is the student, and you have to recognize that the student of what is traditionally a college in Ontario is completely changed. 1 in 5 of our students is a graduate of a BA, right, at minimum. We have people who are going to leave here and have 5 careers and 20 jobs. So how we teach them and the kinds of technologies we use to teach them are evolving all the time. They're not static. So absolutely, we have to make sure we stay ahead of that, right?
I see you have your new business building going on, an expansion up in the city center of Mississauga. How has the new building design changed, and how's it coming along?
Well, the remarkable thing is it looked like a hole in the ground a few months ago, and I was going by there a few days ago and thought, wow, this thing's really moving along. It looks fantastic. It's double the size of the other building we have at the Hazel McCallion campus. This is called HMC2. Right. And in it, there will be a creativity institute. There will be architectural technology. There will be interior design. There will be more business classes. And it's really an opportunity for us to have a creative commons. And Mississauga is one of those cities that gets the knowledge economy. So we want to move with them into more of those kinds of opportunities. So HMC2 will make it so that we have about 6,000 to 7,000 students in Mississauga who are able to go to Sheridan as well.
Fantastic. And you, how do you stay connected to the community? You talked about Mississauga. You've embedded yourself and have a real pulse for what's emerging. What are the trends beyond just industry? It's being connected to government, K-12 as well?
I think, you know, one of the great things about polytechnic learning, and that's what we really are, is that our research is applied. So we have to interface with everybody, not just business, but with the communities. We pop-up innovation is something I'm very interested in, so that cool. if you if you appear in a library in one of our cities with 3D printers and tiny robots and AutoCAD that creates an architectural environment. If our visual design people, our illustrators, they all show up, and young kids go in there. Somebody turned to one of our people, the chief librarian up in Brampton, and said, when we had a robotics thing going on, I've never seen more boys than that. They're just pouring in the door. So the more we can get people, the kids, to touch the future in some way, the more they no longer fear it and they start imagining what's their place going to be in it. How's it going to work for them? So that's important. And making sure government supports what we do. And, we have a fantastic applied research track record. We're number one in Ontario in terms of that kind of thing. And
congratulations.
Yeah, number six in Canada, I think, but number one in Ontario.
Well, that's a great segue to my next question. Fast forward to 2025. How will students be learning differently, and what will learning spaces look like at that point?
Wow, Robert. You're messing with my head.
I suspect you'll have a child in university at about that time.
I'll have grandchildren and a child in university
there you go.
At that time. I have a full spectrum pop. I'll be an old guy. I really struggle with that, and I'm happy that I'm struggling. I really like to stay confused. I think if anybody could give you a straight answer for 2025 and what kind of a classroom we have, don't trust them, because we don't know yet. Technologies are available. It doesn't mean that they have uptake. I've got a 10-year-old at home, and he said to me, what do you think this morning at breakfast? He said, what do you think of this car that drives itself, Dad? I said, well, what do you think? He said, I don't think I'd like that very much. What if it hits something? What if it crashes? What if?
Right.
And I said, sweetheart, sometimes we think stuff up, but how people use it, we don't know if they'll really like it or not. We fall in love with toys and machines, but it doesn't mean that they're the kind of thing that really make a person feel like, I love this. I think I really am learning, right?
That's true enough. In fact, there were innovations that came out, PDAs early on, that didn't stick. And timing's everything as well. I mean, let's reverse backwards and look at how long the iPad's been around. I think it's only about 6 years. So in that time, the transformation that's happened in those 6 years, it's been every few years you see a transformational technology that really serves as an accelerator.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is we can't be afraid of whatever's coming.
No, absolutely.
We have to be able to say, let's try some learning this way. And academic innovation is something that we're very serious about at Sheridan, because we realize that if we try to stick to whatever was, there'll be some value in that. There's no doubt about it. There is value to the sage on the stage who gives you a lecture and you have the experience of their wisdom, and you have to start thinking more critically and able to communicate your ideas. That's all great. And it might always be that you have to have a balance between body heat, being in the same room, not just with your teacher, but with your peers.
Absolutely.
How many of us still know the same people we went to school with?
Right.
It's networking. So that's important. That's a human need. Now, there might be the other ability to say, for instance, I take a distance learning class at night right now. Once a week, I go up into my office. I turn on this conferencing technology. People appear. I can either watch the person speaking in the big part of the screen, or I can have a gallery view. I can write notes to people while I'm listening to other privately or to the group.
Right.
We can share the recording on Dropbox later if I want to revise or review. All these things are now normal. And imagine our children, the kinds of technologies that come out of their fingertips right now, the digital native, as it were, they will learn differently than we do.
Absolutely. I was intrigued. You mentioned driving. My daughter went for a driver's test today,
How'd
and
she do?
she did well her second time, like her brother. I said, you just want to stick with your brother. He had to rewrite it. So, but what was interesting was her preparation was on her mobile phone, and she had an app to prepare for it. She did a test.
Right.
So, and why, we need to go where the kids are. And I think we're missing the mark in some respects. Why isn't she able to prepare for a math test like that or a science test? She's never got her mobile phone in her hand, preparing for it, doing a preliminary test. So I think we
Okay,
need some
but
work to do.
absolutely. But then, for me, I'm very wary of the idea that you change the technologies and you're changing teaching when the system itself, look at how it's built. There's
Right.
two things it's built on that are no longer of use to us. One is the assembly line, as advanced manufacturing changes everything. And
Right.
small batch personalized manufacturing and rapid prototyping, all these things are changing what used to be a job for life, but very little challenge within the job, right?
Right.
So that's number one. So that's why they all sit in rows, in my opinion. That's why they all are taught to show up, to be quiet, and to perform, right? Because you needed a good
Right.
worker, right? Now,
Absolutely.
at the same time, you have a system of learning that's based on having to go and help your family with the harvest, a 2.5 month summer break to help your family with the harvest. So if we're not going to change those ideas of learning, in that it's when you learn and in what physical environment you learn, what does it matter if you have an app? You're still learning in the same way. So it's
Yeah.
a fundamental ability to go back to what we did in the 60s and 70s and say, alternative forms of education. We'll put them in the public system and we'll make sure people, if people stop asking for a blanket surety that their kid is getting the so-called 3 R's and start thinking in more challenging ways for the benefit of their children, I think that would be an important step.
Absolutely. I think we see wonderful pockets of innovation. I've interviewed a couple of people for this particular report that focus on schools of the future. Some of the districts in Canada are doing wonderful things around inquiry-based learning, changing the traditional, industrial model to learning commons within the school, open spaces. So it is happening. It never happens quick enough is the challenge.
Yeah, and we just have to stay open to change. As human beings, we're reluctant to change. If it was good enough for me and I went to school this way, it'll be good enough for you. And
Absolutely.
I think personalized is the way a lot of things are going to happen. Personalized education is more accessible. Your daughter likes the app. Somebody
Right.
else wouldn't like the app, or else everybody would be using it, right?
Right.
But I think what we have to start doing is creating kind of learning portfolios and finding the kinds of metrics we need to be able to say, this is the student I'm dealing with. This is the basket of ways of learning that this, because we learn all in different ways. I was horrible at school. I could not sit still. I could not pay attention for that long. I just couldn't do it. Wasn't even sitting still. I just couldn't pay attention for that long. So I always felt bad about that, but that's because I learned in a different way. I was a visual learner. I was an experiential learner,
Right. Same here. Hence, that's why we have that mutual friend of ours, Ernie Porter. He's very much the same way.
He's a golfer.
That's right.
That's what he is. And
And a hockey player.
he's a Buddhist golfer.
Well,
That's what
with that, Ralph, I thank you for your time this afternoon. What wonderful
Pleasure.
conversation. You're always inspirational to talk to, and the students are lucky to have you there at Sheridan as well as the president. That was Ralph Ben-Murgy, Executive Director of Strategic Initiatives at Sheridan College. My name is Robert Martellacci of the Mindshare Learning Report. And until next time, keep the learning curve steep.